Bishop Shannon, my brother Jeffrey and I are glad and grateful for the honor of being invited back here to this wonderful Diocese of Virginia, and to all of you for your very warm welcome to us already. We're so glad to be with you. The story is told from ages long ago of a young man who awakened one morning with a question for which he had to find an answer. And his question was, what is the meaning of life? And so he asked all around his village, looking for the answer, none which satisfied him. And finally he was told that atop the mountain off in the distance was an old holy monk who would surely have the answer. What is the meaning of life? And so this young man set out crossing the sea, facing the perils of waves and the Leviathan, and then crossing the endless plain and the desert where he faced snakes and wild beasts and nearly died of thirst, and then climbing up into the mountain where he faced the pelting of hail and avalanches, nearly freezing to death, to finally come to the top of the mountain and to find, sure enough, the cave where this old holy monk lived, who received him warmly. And his question, what is the meaning of life? And the old monk cupped his hands, paused, and said, the meaning of life is a deep well. And the young man said, do you mean to tell me that I have spent all of these weeks crossing the dangers of the sea and trekking the plain and nearly dying in the desert and then facing this horribly cold mountain to come here to hear you say to me that the meaning of life is a deep well? And the old monk, now with some horror on his face, said, you mean to tell me it's not a deep well? From my experience in ministry, and I suspect this is true for you, that the roles to which we're called as ordained ministers of the church draws from a deep well. Scripture, tradition, reason, experience. It takes all we've got. And yet, so much of what can happen in the course of the day or week or year transpires on a much more surface level. The endless planning, negotiating, intervening, the greetings and the meetings that never stop, and it's never enough. And from at least my experience, much of that won't change what's being asked of us. But what we have to do is to feed the root structure of what inevitably goes on at surface level with so much of our life and ministry, to feed the root, to feed the roots. And I would say the dangers are threefold if we don't feed the roots. One is the risk of getting very good at it, of gaining a world of skills and losing our souls. You can get good at this, which I think is a risk for the soul. I'm speaking autobiographically. The second is a brownout. I think that brownouts are a greater danger than burnouts. Brownouts happen slowly and sadly. Losing our first love. And thirdly, to lose our grasp of good news. The good news that we, that you, make accessible. The good news of the gospel to so many people who listen to you, who know your presence and your counsel, your care, your touch. That good news, which is so generously made really present to so many people, needs also to be good news for you. And it is. And these times of retreat, such as this, I would say are just essential for the soul to feed the root structure. And I'm going to say, you're worth it. You're so worth it. Now, this is a retreat, not an advance. Some of you heard me say this a couple of years ago. It's still true. That so much of your life and ministry is advancing. Planning, creating, funding, volunteering to make things happen, moving ahead, making the life and ministry of the church viable and valuable to so many, and you're terrific. You're terrific at it. Those are advances. But this is a retreat, which is going in the opposite direction. A retreat which is a time to recover and restore and retrieve what has been lost or spent or simply missed along the way. And so these times to set aside for replenishment can make a world of difference, not only for those that you serve, but for you, to remind you, why is it that you said yes? Why is it that you said yes to this call, which you said from the bottom of your heart, I'm sure. The psalmist prays, out of the depths have I called to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my prayer. And my brother Jeffrey and I hope that we can speak some to the depths of your soul where God abides with you for you to have access to where God is with you and has been with you and will be with you for you to be able to have access to that. Bishop Shannon asked if we would focus our reflections on the spirituality of leadership. And what Brother Jeffrey and I are going to speak to is the inner life, which is very faithful to being on retreat. You know about the outer life. I mean, what you make happen so amazingly. But this is going to speak to this inner life within your own soul. And this evening, I'd like to speak about hope, about being anchored by hope amidst the changes and chances of life. Being anchored by hope. There's this charming passage in the writings of Lewis Carroll in Alice Through the Looking Glass. The Queen has been speaking to Alice. And the Queen ends this little speech by saying to Alice, by saying, and that's the effect of living backwards. She says, it makes one a little giddy at first, but there's a great advantage in your memory working both ways. And Alice is a little startled by that. And she doesn't understand what the Queen's saying about your memory working in both ways? And Alice responds, I'm sure that my memory only works one way. I cannot remember things before they happen. And the queen says, well, it's a poor sort of memory that only works backwards. And I would say that that's absolutely true, especially with regards to God's gift of hope. Hope is a memory we project into the future. Hope is not something that you can see. St. Paul says rhetorically, for who hopes for what one can see? Hope is not necessarily pretty. It's not the same as optimism. Hope is not a skill. It's not something to muster or master. Hope does not begin with us. Hope is a spiritual gift that begins with God, God's hope in us. Hope, which gives us the resilience to face the future, comes out of the reservoir of the past. Hope, which gives us the resilience to face the future, comes out of the reservoir of the past, of our past, of your past. And I would say that hope is absolutely essential for thriving, not just surviving, but thriving, especially during these very uncharted times in which we are living and ministering as ordained ministers of the church. You recall the traditional symbol for hope? Well, in the title, it's a giveaway. Do you remember? It's an anchor, which comes from the letter to the Hebrews. A steadfast anchor of the soul. An anchor is quite an interesting metaphor. The anchor of hope rests deeper in the water than what happens on the surface of life, amidst the ever-changing weather and the winds and the storms and the tumult. The anchor is deeper in the water. An anchor will allow you to rest. An anchor will hold you fast, keep you from drifting or getting lost or running aground in a storm. And yet, an anchor can be raised. It travels with you as you sail ahead in life. God's gift of hope is an essential help, I would say, for sailing amidst the changes and chances of life. And to sail with expectation and vibrancy and faithfulness. Hope is a heavenly ballast to help us live into God's future. And I want to say hope is there for the keeps. You remember St. Paul saying, this is at the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, faith, hope, and love abide. True? I mean, how's that sound with regards to hope? A couple of weeks ago, I was having a conversation with a man, I'll say a man of high visibility, someone in a leadership role whom many people look to and listen to, much respected, inspiring, and yet at the moment in which we were speaking, in quite deep despair. And he said to me, if they only knew, I feel so hopeless. And I listened to him for a long while. Very difficult stuff going on with his family, with his elderly parents and with his children. And then there was the ramifications of the economic downturn and how this was affecting his professional and his personal life. He said his marriage wasn't really falling apart. It was more frozen. Kind of nothing was happening there. Very sad. And then he'd had some personal health scares that weren't going away. And I listened for a long while. We shared some tears together. Very difficult stuff. And then, again, after a long while, he said, I'm hopeless. And he asked me what I thought. And I paused and I said to him, I don't believe you. And he was shocked. he was so shocked that he started laughing, and I started laughing, and he said, you've got to be joking. And I said, I'm not joking. I don't believe you. I said, I don't believe you're hopeless, not even close. Not even close. And I would say the same to you now if you and I were having a similar conversation. Are you hopeful just now? If you're feeling hopeless or hope-deprived, then I want to impart some good news. I absolutely, confidently believe that the gift of hope is within your reach now. The words of the prophet Jeremiah still ring true to me. For surely I know the plans I have for you. Plans for your welfare and not for harm, says the Lord, to give you a future and a hope. Still true. I want to tell you what I think hope is and what I think it isn't. And then several thoughts on how to claim it or reclaim it more fully. Hope is expectant desire. The melding of expectation and desire. Expectation alone is not hope, and desire alone is not hope. There are things that we desire, but we don't expect. And the desire may have to do with a person or a place or a position or an outcome that we want to have or know or realize, and we desire it. We desire it. But we don't expect it. Is it going to happen? Are the Red Sox going to win the World Series? I don't think so. There are things we desire but don't expect. And that's not hope. That's just wishful thinking. It may be a daydream or a delusion. Things that we desire but we don't expect. And likewise, there are things that we may expect but don't desire. You may expect that you're going to be audited by the IRS this year. Or that one of your colleagues will be disappointed or angry with you, maybe chew you out. You expect it. Or that you'll get a miserable head cold sometime this winter. You expect it. Always do. You may expect something, but you don't desire it. And that's not hope. That's what is it? I don't know. Maybe anxiety, maybe a nightmare. But it's not hope. It's just an expectation. But hope is the melding of expectation and desire. Expectant desire. It's It's the sense of possible, that something will change, that something will come. Hope is fueled by the presence of God in our life, the whole of our life, our past, our present, our future, which is always present to God, to God's presence. And into the ground of our being, God seeds hope. We have a sense of the seedlings of hope beginning to germinate long before we can see how they will blossom. Hope smacks of adventure. Hope is open for a surprise. You know those wonderful words from St. Irenaeus, 2nd century. The glory of God is the human being fully alive. The glory of God is the human being fully alive. We have hope for what is possible, not predictable, but possible. We don't hope for what is impossible. To be fully alive presumes hope, I would say. Now, what about the impossible? If I said to you that I'll be in the starting lineup this coming weekend as a quarterback for the New England Patriots, you'd probably only roll your eyes if you knew me at all and said, well, Curtis, give it a rest. Because we don't hope for the impossible, the known impossible. We don't hope for that. Hope doesn't work that way. When we know something is impossible, that's not a vestment of hope. Nor do we find hope in things that we can easily obtain, or things that we seemingly automatically have. You probably didn't say earlier today, I hope that they have running water and electricity at Shrine Mount. You were already fairly assured, all of us were, of the wonderful hospitality and facilities that are predictably present here for us all at Shrine Mount. We didn't hope for that. That was gratis, a gift, which we presumed. We didn't hope for it. We hope for things that are possible. So we have hope that the price of gas keeps coming down. We hope someone's plane will arrive on time, that someone we love will be well. We hope that there will be an intervention in the violence of this world. These are things we cannot guarantee will be accomplished or produced or engendered or created, but we do hope for them. Hope, I'm calling expectant desire, and it has three components. What I hope for, I do not yet have or see. What I hope for, I do not yet have or see. It may be difficult to be realized. Thirdly, but I have a sense I can obtain it or reach it. It is possible. It is possible that it will come to be. And without this sense of hope for ourselves and for the life that surrounds us, we do nothing. We don't act or function. There's no energy because there's no sense of the possible. And when we feel hopeless, the pain can become intolerable. Some of you may know something of this. And if it's unaddressed, it may go underground and turn into depression or into some kind of acting out that could lead to an addiction. Hope moves us into the future. Hope looks to the next step, whatever it is, whatever form it may take. If there's hope, we take the step. Hope is not particularly spectacular, not something that we just save for a crisis. Hope is present in each moment as it looks into the next. I would not have gotten out of bed this morning without a sense of hope. I would not take in a breath right now without some deep sense that the air around me would respond to my bidding. Do you know that old Latin phrase, dum spiro spero, while I breathe, I hope. Dum spiro spero. I would not begin this sentence if I didn't have some hope I could finish it. I would not have faced you this evening if I didn't have some sense of hope that we together could find something helpful and encouraging. Everything in life works on this same presumption. We hope that the muscle will work, that the eye will see if we look, that the ear will hear if we listen. We hope that cars will stop at stop signs, that the food in the supermarkets is fresh and not spoiled. We hope that our families and friends and church and nation will survive, that the governments of the world will work together. And so I have this question for you. In this season of your life just now, where are you right now with this theme of hope? I'm banking my life on its being there. You have hope. It's God's gift. You have hope. I'm sure of that, for starters, or you wouldn't have gotten out of bed this morning. You've been given the gift of hope by God. You do have hope, but maybe it's in seedling form. And so I want to suggest several ways to grow the seeds of hope in your life, which I'm confident are there. For one, demarcate what is hopeless in your life. You can protect the seeds of hope in your life by marking off the areas of hopelessness and acknowledging them, facing them directly, not with despair, but with intent of keeping them from polluting, where you actually have grounds for hope. There are scores of things you probably cannot do, where you are hopeless or maybe feel incompetent or are inadequate. Situations all of us will know that we can't easily handle, where we feel quite hopeless. It can make a remarkable difference in your life to keep these things sorted out from those areas of your life that are possible and that actually teem with prospect. Areas of hopelessness, I would say, are a fact of life. Name them, claim them, demarcate them, get some help with them, if help would be helpful. And then get on living your life where there are wellsprings of hope. Demarcate what is hopeless in life. Don't let it pollute your hope. Secondly, spend your energies living now. Spend your life's energies living now. There's a reason why today is not tomorrow. You need today, the provisions of today, to prepare you for the prospect of tomorrow. Don't cut in line. Don't get ahead of yourself. You will know that you've gotten ahead of yourself if you find your hope has been replaced by anxiety. It's like taking the seedling out of your garden that's beginning to grow and pulling it out of the soil to see if it's taking root. You'll kill it. Live today. I think we call this being there. which is a huge challenge in our culture where multitasking is virtually the norm and where an increasing number of people spend more and more of their time in virtual living rather than living in, well, I'll use Paul Tillich's term, the eternal now. Now. We believe in God Emmanuel, God with us, now. And I would say, unless we pick up the scent on the trail now, we will not be able to recognize it in the future. If you find it challenging to live in the moment, I do. If you find it challenging to live in the moment, try this. Do one thing at a time. Take time, take at least some time each day to do one thing at a time. If you are drinking a cup of coffee, drink a cup of coffee. If you are looking out the window, look out the window. Gaze. If you are petting the dog, pet the dog. If you are climbing the steps, do them one at a time with great intention as you rise in life. Pay attention. Hope is an anchor to the soul, and you need to be anchored in the now to prepare you for the next. There's a reason why today is not tomorrow. You need today, the provisions of today, to prepare you for the prospect of tomorrow. Don't cut in line. You may know the writings of Rainer Maria Rilke. Rilke says, I would like to beg you to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart and try to live the questions of life as if they were locked rooms of books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for answers which could not be given to you now because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now, and then perhaps someday, far into the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. Live in the now. Anchor yourself in the now. Thirdly, I'd like to make a subtle, but I think it's an important distinction between hopes and hope. Between hopes and hope. They're like cousins, but they're not exactly the same. Hopes are things. Hopes are glimpses of things we wish for, or see, or imagine. Hopes are glimpses of things we wish for, or see, or imagine. And our hopes grow out of hope. Hope is anchored in the things that we cannot see. As I said a moment ago, St. Paul's writing, "For in hope we are saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience." The difference between hopes, which we can at least begin to see, imagine, and hope, which we cannot see. Now, here's a way you might be able to get in touch with this distinction, and it's it's a bit drastic. I'm going to suggest you try something and try this here if this seems inviting. We'll just pause here for a couple of minutes. And here's my suggestion to you. Make a list on your paper or in your mind of three things where you have hopes for change, where you have hopes for change. They can be related to yourself or your family or your work or your future. Three things that you can see or imagine. Hopes you have. Hopes. Okay, you ready? Now hold on now. Draw a line through them. They're not going to happen. Now, Chris, I don't know what your three things are, and I don't know if they're going to happen or not. But if you can draw a line through these three things and still be there, still be breathing, what is left when we've seen our hopes come and go, what is left is hope. What is left, I think, is what St. Paul calls abiding hope. Deep is an anchor. And then lastly, draw hope from your own memory. Which is your past? Which is always present to God? Draw hope from your own memory. Now here's what I mean. How in the world have you faced what you have had to face to be where you are now? How have you possibly done it? You are probably a walking miracle. You're certainly an experienced navigator. What can you learn by looking backwards in your life that will help cultivate the seeds of hope in your life for the unknown future? Draw from your own miracle memory what you already know about navigating in uncharted waters. How in the world have you faced what you have faced to get to be where you are now? And I would say this is how hope comes from our own personal experience of the Paschal mystery. The Paschal mystery, here I'll use words of Archbishop Rowan Williams, the Paschal mystery is our experience of loss and then recovery and then transformation. Our personal experience of the Paschal mystery is our experience of loss and then recovery and then transformation. Probably in the face of many obstacles, your life has extended into this day and is nothing short of a miracle. It's not just Jesus who is a walking miracle. You are the walking miracle. Your own experience of loss and recovery and then transformation. And you can draw on the hope of the resurrection out of your own miracle memory. Christ has been with you, and Christ is with you, yet Christ before you and behind you, within you, beneath you, above you, at your right, at your left. Christ, when you lie down, when you sit down, when you arise. Do you remember St. Paul's formula? We boast in our sufferings, knowing that. Do you remember his formula? Wonderful formula. We boast in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint us because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit that has been given to us. Hope is an anchor amidst the storms of life. Hope is a spiritual gift that begins with God, God's hope in us. And you've got it. You've got it. You've clearly got it. Now, here's a side note. When I say hope, I'm not talking about optimism. Optimism is based on what we can see. Hope is based on what we can remember. Not long ago, Archbishop Desmond Tutu was asked whether he was optimistic that the Israelis and Palestinians would be able to live together in justice and peace. He was asked whether he was optimistic, and do you know what he said? No. He said he's not optimistic, but he is hopeful. He said, I am a Christian. I am constrained by my faith to hope against hope, placing my trust in things as yet unseen. Hope persists in the face even of evidence to the contrary, undeterred by setback and disappointment. This morning, at least some of us arose in darkness, with every hope that we would see a sunrise. When you're in the middle of the dark night, there is absolutely no clue that a dawning will happen. No reason to even imagine it. Except if you remember that, amazingly enough, it has happened before. And this gives us hope that the dawn shall happen again, miraculously. Wonderful words from Clement of Alexandria, 3rd century. Christ has turned all our sunsets into dawns. A suggestion here for your own pondering and prayer on this theme of hope. Did I mention to you that you have hope? You have hope. Now, to pray and ponder on this gift of hope you've got. Store up light in your soul like with a battery. Life includes both day and night, and this is as true for the soul as it is for the sky. In the dark night of the soul, when you have little or no light, you need to draw on your memory bank, stored light, and this will yield hope. How have you navigated in the dark in the past? God's gift of hope is the assurance you need that dawn will come again, even when you can't see it. Those words from the psalmist, "You, O Lord, are my lamp. My God, you make my darkness bright." In times of darkness, this is your hope. Look backwards. Draw from your miracle memory what you already know about sailing in uncharted waters. Hope, a steadfast anchor to the soul. You have hope. Maybe the invitation in this season of your life is to cultivate it. You have hope. You've got it. Absolutely. I'll tell you one last story. For many years at our monastery chapel, we saw Joan Erickson and her husband Eric. Eric Erickson, the much renowned, beloved child psychologist teaching at Harvard for so many years. Joan was Eric's professional collaborator, dance partner, best friend. And at the time of Eric's death, Eric preceding Joan in death, Joan, a much accomplished poet, wrote a poem. A poem which was read at Eric's funeral. And you might guess the theme of this poem was hope. Here, the widow's poem read at her beloved's funeral, entitled Hope. The word hope, the learned say, is derived from the shorter one, hop, and leads one on to leap. Plato, in his turn, says that the leaping of young creatures is the essence of play. So be it. To hope, then, means to take a playful leap into the future, to dare to spring from firm ground, to play trustingly, invest energy, laughter. And one good leap encourages another. On then with the dance. We have copies of this for you, which we'll have at the back. Hope is a gift from God, and God has given you the gift of hope. Absolutely. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace.